podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome to one of the 10 best English language Fiorentina podcasts on the internet. Welcome to Viola Station.
Welcome back, Viola fans, to a very, very happy Viola Station. Fiorentina are riding high after three straight wins and now sitting fifth in the table. Highest praise to Rocco, Italiano, and company on this terrific start. But the cherry on top has to be Fiorentina, 8 points clear of the Chiesa-led Il Gobbo. Tito, in one word, what are your thoughts? Best introduction ever.
No, that's definitely where I'm at right now. I think we're doing fine. First time Fiorentina have won three in a row since this time in 2019. So it's, you know, not like that was the best year for Fiorentina, but hey, it seems like things might be okay here. And, you know, to celebrate, Mike, what are you drinking?
There's definitely no alcohol for me today. It is all coffee, not normally a coffee drinker, but it's been a pretty interesting stretch of a couple of weeks. And right now, Mina's not feeling too well, so she is not really sleeping at night. And I've been averaging about 3 hours of sleep. So loading up on coffee, not normally a coffee drinker, but when you need it, you need it. Man, how about you?
I'm drinking water because we started at 9 a.m. and that's just a little bit early even for me. I do got to say, though, we were talking about this before we started recording. So Mike, in the past 5 years, married, daughter, work's going great, signs on to write for Viola Nation, starts building these connections in Florence. Everything's fine. As soon as Fiorentina start winning, hurricane, tornado, flood, sick child. I think that maybe there's some connection here. And given how Fiorentina looks, I think we should all keep Mike in our thoughts right now, because it might get only worse for him as it gets better for Fiorentina.
You know, it's one of those things where if I have to suffer a little bit for Fiorentina to prosper and all of those fans out there to be happy again, by all means, bring it on. I'll take it. We'll tread through a whole bunch of shit on our way through a whole bunch of wins. That's good.
Man, a glutton for punishment and a true Viola hero. All right, well, let's talk about a couple of true Viola heroes, because we do got to talk birthdays. And the big one to start with is Miguel Montuori would have been 89 on this Friday, the 25th. And I know that he's not really one of your guys, but I just think he's one of the most fascinating characters in Fiorentina history. He was born in Argentina and came across in, what would that have been, 1956, ended up making 182 appearances for the club, scoring 79 goals, helped him win the Scudetto in his first season, won the Coppa Italia in 1960-61, won the Cup Winners' Cup in 1960-1961, just generally considered one of the greats of his era. He was the first oriundo captain of the Italian national team, the first foreign-born. And then when he was 28 years old, he took a shot to the eye in a friendly against Perugia that permanently damaged his vision and retired. That was it. 28, done. Fiorentina had finished second for the 4 years previous with him, and then they dropped down to seventh the year that he retired, which shows you how important he was. And then, like a real Fiorentino, he went back to Chile in 1971 after pursuing a coaching career, but came back to Florence in 1988, became a librarian there, and then coached youth teams in Isolotto before dying in 1998, just 65 years old. I mean, just one of the great tragic stories, I feel like. And yeah, happy birthday to him. Hope wherever he is, he's got a little bit more luck going right now.
That's an incredible story. I mean, you just educated me. One of those things where I think probably a lot of us newer fans should learn a lot more of those older players who won trophies with the club. But, you know, for you, that's hitting home on a couple different things. You know, so having some heritage down to South America, Fiorentina, and then, come on, librarian.
Yep.
That excites you, right?
Yeah, anyone who's going to work in a library generally has my attention. If it's, you know, one of the greatest number 10s in Fiorentina history, who then ends up working in a public library for years. I think that's about as cool as it can get. But yeah. I also understand that's just my own like real geekiness there. Let's go. All right. Sorry. Let me wrap that up before I freak out too much thinking about it. We do have another birthday. Stephanie Breitner will be turning 29 on Saturday, the 26th. And she is now what, the third longest serving member of Fiorentina Femminile after coming across in 2018. And she's been a great player for him, I think.
Yeah, when you think about it, there are very few people on this Femminile team that have lasted as long or had as much of an impact. There's been some turnover, and we've always talked about the turnover there. But Steph Bree has her own fan club. I mean, like that is just absolutely unheard of. There are a group of people inside of the Go Women's who have formed the Steph Bree group, have their own shirts, have their own chants, make their own signs. I mean, it is absolutely special. And, you know, making that full circle, she is somebody who, after every game, takes the time to come over, say hello to the fans. We'll take pictures with everybody. She is just a fabulous, wonderful, warm person that you want to be around, you want to cheer for, and you want to hope that she's always going to be there with the club. So she's been fabulous, what she does on the field and what she does off of the pitch. Love it.
Yeah, signed through 2022, signed a one-year extension this past summer, so hopefully she'll just keep doing that forever and stay in Florence, because, yeah, she's just been great. All right, well, we're through with birthdays now, so let's turn to some other current events, and let's tell you what, why don't we start talking about a little bit of a win in Genoa, why don't we, because that seems like a good, fun thing to discuss. I'm guessing that most everyone listening has by now watched the game or read about the game enough or seen the highlights, where we don't have to recap it too much. So instead, Mike, what are two things that Fiorentina did right against Genoa?
I'll start off with the first, which is, you know, the whole entire Italiano impact here. That high press really dictated play.
Yeah.
And not only did it dictate play, but I love the fact that Fiorentina went out with an agenda and we bullied Genoa into our game plan. I think I saw at the end of the game yesterday, we had twice as many passes as Genoa had throughout the entire game. We caused Genoa to panic, which, when was the last time that you saw Fiorentina, Fiorentina fans, Viola fans love this style of play, this high press, this more offensive minded, you know, dictating play, you know, beautiful passing, quick movement. This is the team that this club, these fans are used to seeing. And it's been absent for probably the past 3, 4, 5 years. But Italiano he's something special. And what he has done pretty quickly, if you think about it, he didn't have all of these players together in the summer. We know that Nico came in pretty early, but then everything, it delayed, you know, between, you know, the European, the South American competitions, and then the market and the movement of the players going in and out. He didn't have these players. He didn't have them getting into his system, getting into his fitness. And you can see that there's still a couple of players that are not ready for an Italiano-type game. But what he's already able to do with this high press, this instant energy, and it's not just Genoa. And Genoa is not a bad team. But, you know, Atalanta, we beat. And I think, you know, probably going back even to Roma, you can see where there were glimpses, but it just needed some more time. I think we're going to continue to get better. That's the first thing, is we dictate a play, that high press. We were bullies. I loved it. How about you?
You know, Ed, it's funny. For me, I came out with almost the exact same takeaway, except for me, it was, despite the fact that it was better suited to water polo out there, Fiorentina stuck with the plan. I mean, it's all about moving the ball, like you said, quickly on the floor and pressing like crazy. And it's so easy to let the weather change your plans. When it's wet, the ball doesn't move along the ground very well. We saw a couple of times where it kind of held up on people and led to a couple of awkward moments. I think Bart Dragowski in particular had one that could have been catastrophic. But nevertheless, Fiorentina stuck with what they did. 63% possession, 16 shots, 5 on goal, 86% passing accuracy, all pretty good numbers. And I think that that demonstrates to me is that the team believes in Italiano's system, and they believe that they can do what it is that he wants them to do. And when you have conditions like that that make it very easy for you to just say, well, all right, we're just going to sit back and kick and rush and boot it up to Dusan and hope that he does something cool and not worry about moving the ball with all these quick, sharp passes. The fact that even despite the weather and the storm and the beautiful Ligurian late summer, they were totally happy to keep doing what they do. So that kind of self-belief and belief in a system is something we haven't gotten to see that for a long time in Florence. And oh man, that's really fun for me to see. It's not just us as fans who really like it. It's the players too.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you were a guy who grew up playing American football. So I'm sure that as you played throughout all your years, you've probably heard this phrase, this term from your coach many times, playing with reckless abandon. you know that phrase.
Oh, man. Yeah.
And you know, when I look at a player like Castrovilli, who, you know, unfortunately took a bad knock yesterday, but I was so impressed to see the veracity that he was playing the game with, something that was missing last year, seeing that he's bought into this team, this style, and for him to attack that ball with reckless abandon, willing to push himself into the posts and suffer potential injury was one of the most impressive things that I've seen. Now, we don't want him to get injured, but just the fact that he has changed his demeanor to now fully buying into this team, to that coach, to Rocco, to everything from top down to bottom was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. He's hungry. So is the rest of the team. They want it. And that, I mean, I hate reducing it down to, one team wanted it more. Cause like generally that's not really the case. These are all professionals, but right now, I think you can pretty much say that Italiano has them wanting it, and it's so great.
Yeah.
What would be your second thing that really stood out to you in this one that they did right?
I think what stood out to me, the second part, and I'm just going to use this as a teaching moment for myself. I'm messaging you. I'm messaging Alessandro Sisto and Maurizio Gambarucci and a couple other people during the game. And what happens? Safinara comes in and Benassi comes in and Kokorin comes in. And, you know, all of these players that you're scratching your head and you're thinking to yourself, what the hell is going on? And Unskinny Bop Bop reference there, right?
Excellent.
The fact that we got contribution from some of these players, Kokorin aside, I mean, we all saw the contributions he was giving, but the fact that Saponara was able to come in there, and I'm here saying, like, why? We have two of the slowest wingers, oldest wingers on side of Dušan, who's struggling to get any type of service whatsoever and involvement in the game. And now we're going to put him with Ricky Sapanar. Like, okay, it doesn't make sense to me. And I'm questioning it, but clearly we have to have faith in Vincenzo Italiano. Like, yeah. He knows what's going on.
You think he's got some ideas in there? Yikes, man.
No coach. And listen, I don't think that this is a Mike McCormick thing. I think it's a Mike McCormick needs to learn thing, but but it's something that I've been so conditioned to over the past 3, 4, 5 years with the coaching, the substitution tactics, the fact that a coach isn't in tune with his players and vice versa. That's completely changed. Like, we got contributions from so many players that I would have never guessed, but these players are playing above their own ability. And if we go back to, and I know it's probably a year and a half ago at this point, but we did a podcast and we were talking about the sum of the parts is less than the parts as a whole. That's where we were before. I feel like we have great players, but we're getting a lot of those fringe players to play above their game because of the coaching and the ideologies and the buy-in across the board. So that amazed me. And it's one of those teaching moments where I think now we're at a time where we don't have to be so critical. Like Rocco, Joe, Prade, they did a great job. They went out, they got players, they got a coach.
We heard it. Yeah.
You know, Gattuso, get the hell out. We don't need that type of mentality. We have the guy. And now we need to, as fans, just support them with that love and devotion that Fiorentina fans are known for, rather than being as critical as we were for the past 3, 4, 5 years, which, again, wasn't the fault of the fans. It just was the condition of the environment going back 4 or 5 years ago up until this year. I think we're in a much better spot.
Yeah, and I think your point about the fringe players really coming on and looking sharp. Look at Alfred Duncan, who was just completely written off last year, and now he looks like he's maybe Fiorentina's best all-round midfielder.
Agreed.
Eric Hulgar, everyone thought he was limited, maybe couldn't do the job. He looks great.
Yep.
Even Jose Callejon, for crying out loud. I mean, he's definitely not perfect, but he looks... I mean, he's Kaya Holt, but he's vaguely competent, which is a huge step up. And I mean, you know, you can't fix Kokorin because you can't fix stupid. But everyone else, Italiano has done such a great job with. Marco Benassi, new world-class right back. Why not? You know, like, that's just so great. I love that. I think that's exactly right. He's getting the most out of what he has. And when's the last time a Fiorentina coach did that?
It's been a long time, but it is a great, great feeling. I mean, I can't remember feeling this good about a situation. And when we did, I think it was more hope. You know, the last time we felt this good, it was hopeful.
Yeah.
We're actually seeing an environment change in front of our eyes. It's a great, great feeling.
I mean, just listen to the tone of our voices on here. We both sound excited. When was the last time we were excited about the Fiorentina men's team on this podcast? It's been a little while. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think that just reflects so well on the coach and the players and the overall atmosphere there. Right. Sorry. Let me get us back on track here. the other thing that I thought was really interesting and that they did right is that Fiorentina scored 2 goals, created chances, despite the fact that Dušan wasn't very good. He wasn't all that involved. He only had 21 touches. He only took one shot. And I mean, if I'm being honest, it seemed like Nikola Maksimovic definitely got the better of that battle, which, I mean, he's a very good player. I think he's been underrated for a long time.
Very experienced.
Yeah. You know, not a lot of defenders are going to get the better of Dušan Vlahović week in and week out. But even then, you know what happened? Fiorentina had enough in the locker to still pull out a win away in bad conditions while missing some key players. They got those contributions from Ricardo the Cheese Saponara, who nobody thought was going to be a major contributor. And now, okay, maybe he is that fourth winger. Maybe that's the right call. And so I think, to me, the fact that even when the team's best player, which Dusan Vlahović is, let's not pretend about this, they still had twice as many shots as their opponent. They had more than twice as many shots on target. The fact that they can still do that with Dusan having an off day, what that says to me, and probably to other teams they're going to play, is that you can't just double team Vlahović and assume that that's going to shut down the entire team. There are other guys who can hurt you, and you have to account for everyone out there. And again, when's the last time that happened? It feels so, so good. I know it sounds like I'm glorying in Vlahović having an off night, and I kind of am, because he shouldn't have to be the guy who carries the team every single game. But give the guy a day off every once in a while, and let Nico, let Jack, let Ricardo Saponara carry the load.
Well, and the sooner that those players pick up their game and outperform their abilities, the better season that Dusan's going to have. So it's the beginning of the season. He already has 3 goals versus the first half last year, he only had 1. The sooner that these players pick up their game and show that they are for real and they're doing that already, the season's going to become that much easier for Dusan. It's going to become that much easier for Italiano. It's going to become that much easier for every single player on
the pitch. Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, the one thing that I saw from this game that worries me a little bit and that I want to see him fix is I would like to see this team play a full 90, or in this case, 98 minutes. You know, they still haven't kept a clean sheet. And they've been conceding goals late this year. Of the 6 goals they've given up, half of them have been in the last 15 minutes of games, which is a big problem, I think. They conceded in the 89th minute against Torino to throw away a clean sheet, giving up a penalty here in the 98th minute. I mean, obviously it wasn't a real penalty, but still. And so I wonder, do you think that's because Italiano's style does require so much running and so much intense focus? Are these players just tired physically or mentally by that late in the game? Or do you think it's just a matter of luck and everyone getting on the same page?
So let me just actually be a little bit more positive about this. I actually think this is evolution. I think this is evolution. Go back to last year, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. We were giving up goals throughout the game, but we were losing them. I mean, I can think of so many situations where we were up 2-1 in the 75th, 80th, 85th minute, and we would lose 3-2. Or, you know, we would be up 2-1 and, you know, in the final minutes of extra time, and then we would, you know, give a consolation away. Like, that's the team that we were. However, evolution is one of those things. You don't just go from crawling to walking and running right away. Like, you know, we've all seen the pictures, like, of the hunchback and you know, I eventually started walking upright.
Is that a Juventus shot? I think that's a Juventus shot. Well done. Good knuckle dragging. Well done. Round of applause for McCormack.
Producer Mike, throw in that laugh, please, right here. you know, I actually think this is a good thing. We are up now 2-0, and we're giving up 2-1s. I'm fine with that, because at some point, as Italiano has more play, he's dictating his terms to this team, and the culture is continuing to change. The mentality is continuing to change. The focus is going to be much more laser-like. This team will no longer give up those goals, but you can't just snap your finger and expect for that to go away. Rocco's been telling us this for a long time. Like, it's going to take time. Took a little bit more time than I think a lot of fans were comfortable with, but we're there right now. And I think that we're still there with Italiano. He's done, in my personal opinion, he's done far more he's far more exceedingly done what he should have done. 9 points out of four games against really good competition, going away to Atalanta and beating them, like, that's some legit stuff. I think that this is a positive. We'll get away from it. I have no doubt in my mind that this coach, these players are on the path of something very, very good. I will go back. If we would have gotten a right wing, I think we could have been really competing for top four. I'll stand by that. And if we get a nice right wing in December with the performance of this club, if we're in that top seven range going in, it's possible. Like, there's a lot of positivity right now, and that's a good thing.
Nah, paging Mimmo Berardi, who just got stripped of the captaincy over at Sassuolo. No, I definitely think that it's the fact that they're conceding goals late. You know, I think that's something they'll work on, but it is something, especially against better teams than Genoa and Torino, that worries me a little bit. We've seen Fiorentina last year definitely conceded a lot of goals late, and that was when they weren't having to run and focus quite as much. So no, I definitely think Italiano will fix that up. But for right now, that's really the only thing I saw that made me feel worried. Was there anything that kind of jumped out at you that made you a little bit anxious about that one?
And I'll nitpick here, because I'm back on the positive love train here. So I'll nitpick. Who are the starters? You know, is there going to be any consistency across the first team? And I mentioned it earlier, these players weren't playing together during the summer because of Fiorentina's approach to the Mercato. And that's fine. We are where we are, and we have a great group of players at this point. But we do need this group of young, very good professional players who are coming from all across the world to play in Florence. And it seems like whoever you talk to, everybody's loving it. But we need to allow these guys to play together and to get the most out of it. So my only concern is, when will we see the starters be picked? When will we see the starters have consistent minutes? And when will we see that evolution of them gelling together to ensure that we're going to get the maximum output on the back end? That's talking about the next step of evolution. That has to be it, right?
I'm actually not all the way on board with you on this one. I think one, Italiano at Spezia last year rotated his side so much. I think he used like the third most players of any team in Serie A. He really wants to keep his guys fresh, and especially getting Inter Milan on Tuesday, I can see why he would want to rotate a lot. But more to that, I think it's really, really good that, I mean, Fiorentina has some guys who are obvious starters. Dusan Vlahovic is going to start every game he can because there's no backup. We all saw what happens when you put Sasha Kokorin out there. It's like playing 10 against 12. I think that there's a couple other guys. Jack Bonaventura right now is probably undroppable.
Yes, agreed.
Cristiano Biraghi, probably undroppable.
He's a captain.
He is, yeah. Much to your delight, I'm sure.
I'm coming around to it.
All right. Yeah, he does play with some fire. He's not afraid to get in people's faces, which I think is a great quality in a captain. Right now, Odriozola, definitely undroppable, especially while Venuti's hurt.
Yep.
So, I mean, there's a few guys who are going to play pretty much every minute right now. But I think it's great that there are so many other options. So you can keep rotating, you can keep guys fresh, and you can keep them hungry. Nobody's guaranteed of a spot, or, I mean, some people are, but not everyone. And I think that's really good. These players are going to have to work and earn a spot, and they're going to have to be on in training, and I think that is going to rub off in games too, that kind of intensity. So as an established first 11, I'm not as worried about it. I love that Italiano can chop and change to fit the situation and the opponent. And if someone's been bad in training, out they go, and you can find someone else who will be just as useful and bring different things to the 11. So to me, I'm not too worried about having a nailed on starting lineup. To me, it's more about, we've got, you know, five guys who are pretty much undroppable, and then everyone else, we just fell out around them.
Last question on this game, and you mentioned it couple minutes ago. Was the Igor penalty a penalty?
No.
Yeah.
No. No, it didn't touch him at all. What? But, I mean, it's Serie A.
And it was foolish. I'll say that. Sure. You know, it was not the smartest swipe, but it was not a penalty. And I think that's one of those things that as Italianos here and coaching this team and developing these players, that's a great teaching moment for him right there.
Yeah.
And I think Igor's going to become that much better as a result of having Italiano and that moment on Saturday.
For sure. Yeah. It's definitely a learning moment, but to not make those Carlos Salcedo type challenges in the area where you just stick a leg out and let someone run into it and win a penalty. But yeah, Milan Badel, for a former Fiorentina guy to go down like that with the extra roles to really try and win that and sell it, I didn't like that very much.
Well, I didn't like him after he left us, and I made that very apparent when that happened. So no love lost.
And going to Lazio of all places too. Gross.
No love lost.
Anyways, well, let's keep this thing positive instead of devolving into how much we hate the fascists. Although that is also hating fascists is definitely a positive thing.
Very
that is
positive.
The Viola Station
yes.
official position.
Yep.
Let's get that out there. Right. Getting back to Fiorentina though, which is this podcast. We can do an anti-fascist podcast at some point, maybe.
Afterwards.
Fiorentina have a win streak. First time since 2019, September 2019. And let's jump into this a little bit. Why is Fiorentina winning these games? Not just Genoa, but all of them right now. And why are they going to keep winning?
I'll go back to what I stated a little bit earlier, but I'm going to make it very, very poignant. This is a team that has adopted the culture of Vincenzo Italiano, not the other way around. I think when we had other coaches coming into this club, they were taking on the ideologies, they were working with the personalities and accepting of the culture that was already existent. When Italiano came here, he was a bull, an absolute bull. And if you were in his way, you were getting knocked over. And that is going to continue. This is Italiano's ship. You will be thrown overboard. Nobody's yelling man overboard. You're just going to be left. So, that's a beautiful thing when you think about it. Now, of course,
Yikes.
You don't want to be the man thrown overboard. But
Holy smokes, dude. I am never getting on a boat with you now.
Well, just don't get on the boat with Italiano, I guess. I may not be that guy, but you know, I love the fact that Italiano has really changed the culture and the dynamic of what's going on inside of the city, inside of this team, and it's translating to the pitch. Take that a step further. Take that one step further, though. The fans are back.
There it is.
You know, we were watching the game yesterday, and the most interesting thing that I took from that game is that it was louder when Fiorentina were singing than anybody on the Genoa side.
Yeah.
Like Fiorentina and those ultras completely took over that game, singing from essentially the start to the end. And in every moment that was critical, they were loud.
Yeah.
You know, that group carries this squad and they buy into Italiano and Italiano loves it. Like that relationship is so critical.
The celebration afterwards where he did the pump up the arms thing in front of the fans. Oh, that was so cool. And yeah, I'm honestly amazed that as a librarian, that the Fiorentina traveling support didn't get asked to leave or shushed because Genoa's I mean the Ferraris was like a library in there.
Yep.
Except for Fiorentina. It was so great. And yeah, that energy makes such a difference. I think the reason for me, number one, that I think they're gonna keep going, again, calling back, everyone's on the same page though. Like you said, everyone knows what their job is. Like we're seeing players do things that we haven't seen them do before. We're seeing the passing combinations between the defenders and the goalkeeper, keeping the ball real deep in ways that we haven't seen before. Everyone knows where to be, where to move to be in position. You're seeing the goalkeepers get that back pass from one side and one time it, switching it all the way to the other, knowing, just trusting that a guy's going to be there and not looking up. Can't imagine that happening under, say, Beppe Iacchini. We're seeing players doing stuff that we haven't seen before. Baragi spends some time in field. Callejon is making these runs at the back post, albeit very slowly, but he's getting there late, you know, like an Italian train. You know he's going to get there, just not on time. And I think the fact that everyone is clearly on the same page is going to give Fiorentina a massive advantage that's only going to increase, because this is just four games. And like you said earlier, the summer, they didn't really have all that much time to get on the same page between the internationals and some late movement in the Mercato. So this team, they know what they're doing. They know their jobs. They know each other's jobs. They trust themselves. They trust each other. They trust their coach. That's what you need out of a winning team. And that's why we're going to keep seeing it happening.
Now, I'm with you. Complete change from where we were before, but now this is an organization from top to bottom. So that dynamic feels very good. Since we're going to ask for a second one, I'm going to throw out what I have been harping on for 2, 3, 4 years. I don't know, whatever it is.
Samuele Ricci.
Well, if we can bring him in after not getting Locatelli, I'm all about it.
Excellent.
I've kind of given up on that at this point. But.
Never surrender, Mike. Never surrender.
However, the need to bring him in isn't as great. You know, many people have been talking about, I really thought that the reason we performed so poorly last year and over the past few years is we had no bridge from the back line. And the beginning of last season, our defense was number one. The end of last season, it was absolute shambles. Yeah. So, you know, we basically went from a defense that carried the first half to Dušan, who carried the back half. And in between, it was the midfield who just had no continuity, no identity. They didn't really know what they were doing and certainly didn't execute. Flash forward. I mean, you can make a case that Jack has been the best player on this team.
Yeah, I think so.
I think that there are few people who would be able to argue against that. And there are times where Jack may not even be the best midfielder on the pitch.
Yeah.
You know, Pulgar has been very good at moments. Duncan, oh. I believe Duncan, there are two games, at least one and a half games, where Duncan was the best player on the pitch.
Yeah. It's like a bowling ball going through there. I love watching him.
He is doing a lot of wonderful, wonderful things. Torreira, I think that he's still bridging into the identity of this club. I still think he's getting match fit. But there were times where he is the one who's allowing that bridge between the defensive back line, moving it up to the midfield and into, those top three. I think he's done a lot of really good things. And more importantly, he's going to only get better. He's a workhorse. Then you take a look at Castrovilli. I love what I've seen from him in spurts. And one of those spurts, unfortunately, led to him getting injured. But if he's able to approach each game, and he's still young, like he should have the energy, although he is, you know, getting engaged to a very beautiful Miss Italian woman.
So that
may be the cause here. But if he's able to keep his energy levels up during the game, I think he's at a point where he doesn't have to shoulder so much responsibility, that he can be why he is so great. That threat in getting to be from a top three to four players moving towards scoring, and he can really break through this season. Obviously, we have to see him through this injury here, but I think that there's a lot of really, really good things coming from this midfield this year.
Man, the Castrovilli thing too. That you remember back when he was first breaking through, and they were calling him the new Cassano because he's from Bari. Yep. Also,
yep.
That wow, you really just made that a new Cassano thing all the way. Well, oh my goodness, dang. All right.
Energy.
Yikes, dude. Okay. So the other reason I think they're going to keep going.
need a moment. You're blushing through that beard.
I got a fan. The vapors are just overcoming me. You need to move the fanning couch into this bunker.
We didn't talk about Sotil's energy, right?
All right. I'm done with my happy breathing, here. The one I thought you were going to fix on here was your large adult son, Dusan Vlahovic. And I think the other reason Fiorentina is going to keep going is that he's not going to have a whole lot more quiet games. We saw last year he was incredible, pretty much week in, week out for months. And yeah, he was quiet against Genoa. Sure, everyone has an off night occasionally. You know, he's only got 1.14 non-penalty expected goals so far. Last year, that was at 0.43. And I really, really don't think that he is going to be in fewer scoring opportunities this year than he was last year. So that's only going to shoot up. Balanzola at Spezia last year under Italiano averaged 0.29 non-penalty X goals per 90 last year. And I really think that he is nowhere near the player Dusan is, with nowhere near the quality of players making those chances. I mean, with respect to Spezia and to Balanzola, I think that that's only going to fly. That non-penalty XG number is only going to shoot up. I think he's going to end up being so, so much better in the next few games and having so many more chances. And if Fiorentina can keep themselves afloat with creativity and goals and open play from elsewhere, and then also be able to rely on Vlahovic to score, they're going to be fine. And I don't see any way that's going to change.
No, I'm with you. And I think it's good now that other people bring up Dusan. I think people were just getting sick of hearing me always talk about Dusan every single minute of every single day. So
are you that guy showing the picture of your kids in the wallet stranger
you meet? It just unflaps itself, you know, picture. It's like an accordion.
It's just accordion, didn't it? Oh man. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you have those for your other kids as well. Of course. Of course.
it might maybe just be a little less accordion-y, right?
It's more of a melodica, maybe. Yeah, little smart. Yeah. all right. Well, I'm gonna go ahead and step on some of the optimism here. The one reason I don't think that Fiorentina is gonna keep a win streak going is because the next team they play is Inter Milan, and Inter looks really, really good to me this year. I thought they were going to fall off quite a bit, losing Lukaku and losing Hakimi. But so far, they have showed no signs of slowing down. They're top of the league right now. They've got the best attack in the game. They're averaging 3.75 goals per match, which is just nuts. They also average the most shots on target. And I think that in terms of how they match up with Fiorentina, they provide some tricky bits there. They don't foul very much, so there won't be very many set piece opportunities, which when you're playing Nikola Milankovic in there, that is going to be one of your main avenues of goal scoring. They tend to build down their left side a whole lot with Ivan Perisic, which means they're going to be targeting Alvaro Odriozola, who, you know, I don't think he's fully match fit yet. You saw him cramp up late against Genoa and have to come off. And he's also defensively occasionally a little bit uneven, let's say. And so I think that's going to be a pretty significant vulnerability. I mean, despite losing, Lukaku and Hakimi, that team is still super talented. There's still so much ability in there. And I think they match up pretty well with Fiorentina in that way. It's a bunch of older veteran players. They all know what it takes to win. They won the Scudetto last year. Simone Inzaghi running a fairly similar system to what Antonio Conte did. So there haven't really been as many growing pains as you might expect under a new manager. And I mean, I know that Fiorentina have played Inter pretty well over the past few years, but Inter's really, really good. And if Fiorentina don't get a win here or lose here, I don't think anyone can get too upset.
I'm with you. I have that as the same reason. I do think we can get a draw, though. I don't think it'll be a situation where we'll continue to win. But I think if we can get a draw coming out of that game, great. Shout out to one of my dear friends, Giuseppe Pione, who is one of Inter's greatest fans here in the United States. He grew up in Calabria and actually made the gelato when I went up to meet Rocco. Great Inter fan. Delicious stuff. Great Inter fan. And it was one of those things where, you know, we support each other's teams, and obviously we can't do that now, but there's a nice rivalry, but we have great conversation about each other's clubs. Inter is a organization right now in flux. They have a lot of issues. None of those issues have reached the pitch yet, which is great for them. But when you talk about what Rocco has done and created a culture of stability, financial security, investment in the right areas, and now we're seeing, you know, how he's able to reap those benefits. That's not the case at Inter. Like, Inter came in with some pretty aggressive investment. Now they've won a lot, you know. The future is pretty uncertain because of that ownership group and the lack of investment that's now able to come from overseas in China, and the balance sheet. And you see, you know, Juve has lost a lot of money. I mean, there's a lot of...
Oh, just keep it coming, keep it coming. Yes, pile that on there, the misery. I love it.
They deserve everything they get, those bastards. You know, there's a lot of reason for concern at the top of Serie A's table, historically. Now, Juve is not the top of the table anymore, which is great. But I think that there is a reason for optimism for Fiorentina fans. This year, we look very good. The culture's changed. We're coming into a January window where there should be some money available. When you think at how things broke out, we essentially broke even in the summer mercato. So there should be some of that Chiesa money available in January. If we, say, wanted to drop a smooth 28, 30 million on a right winger out in Sassuolo.
All right.
But you know, I think we'll draw. I am predicting that right now. So I'll let you know if anybody stubs their toe in the family, or if the house catches on fire. that's going to be an indication of where your betting money should go.
We're hoping for acts of arson at the McCormick household now, so Fiorentina could win. Perfect.
Yep. Oh, I mean, I don't. My dryer broke. My lawnmower broke. I had a couple other things go, so I need to find other things that'll just start breaking in the house.
Holy shit, man. Oh my god. Michael Job McCormack right here, just hanging in for all of you Old Testament people. All right. Well, yeah, so you're saying that you think you're not even predicting a loss. You think it's going to be a draw, so it won't be a win streak anymore, but it'll be an undefeated streak?
Yes. Yeah, I am predicting that right now.
I can live with that.
Yep.
All right, well, let's change gears a little bit here, and let's spotlight some other players real quick. And I wanna call out some of the women's players right now. Who's the player who's really impressed me for Fiorentina Femminile this year, even though the team itself is struggling. Let's go with Claudia Neto. Yeah. I think has been pretty good. She's looked like the player we thought we were getting last year. And I think she took some time to settle in. She had some injury issues. Seemed like occasionally she just didn't quite get how things were supposed to be working. Now she looks much better. She's dribbling from midfield. She's winning the ball. She's dictating the tempo. And I think that she is going to be critical to Patrizia Panico and Fiorentina Femminile's future success, because she is experienced and maybe the best player on the team now.
I will be honest, with recent events, I have not been able to pay too much attention. So I cheated here.
Fair.
I did reach out to Marco Barbetti, who is a Fiorentina super fan, one of the greatest guys
in
the city of Florence, follows us on Twitter and comments on many of our on our threads. Just a wonderful person. He told me so far this season, it has been the aforementioned Steph Bree, who has been the best player. You know, the only one that really has been on point and has been shouldering a lot of this. I'm going to shift this a little bit and change somewhat of the dynamic, though. You know, there is a lot changing with this club. And we knew, I don't know if everybody knew, but once you get rid of a coach like Antonio Cincotta, you're going to have change. And I did not predict that change would be good. You need to forecast at least a year or so.
Maybe more.
Of transition. And when that transition is supported with a mercado like the one that we recently had, which was not very good in bringing in talent. And when you see that the top 5-6 teams in Serie A Femminile are investing buco bucks into their club, you have what we see here, which now I'm thinking of, what is that? Guns N' Roses, Failure to Communicate. So, I don't know. I'm just thinking about lyrics.
I was going Cool Hand Luke, what we have here.
Yeah, well, and I think they pulled it from that, didn't they?
Did they? Oh, is it? Okay. I'm not a big Axl guy, so yeah.
Quick aside, I will no longer listen to Guns N' Roses. Anytime it comes on the radio, I turn it off because I refuse to give them my listening to pay Axl Rose after he broke up Guns N' Roses. So just a quick aside. So back to it, you know, Femminile are in a tough spot. 0 points. Cincotta has 3 points off of a first year team in Sampdoria. I don't know how it's going to get any better. There is a lot of bickering in and amongst the fans. There is a contingent, growing one, that is definitely turning on the club and the club support of the Femminile team. While you do still see a core group who are very supportive of everything that's going on, I wonder how that's going to play out, though. This is a very tough season for them. The first support club, fan club for a Femminile team in Italy, the most passionate group of people you could ever imagine, shows up to everything. They've only seen winners, and now they're seeing a team 3 games without a point. And I think they only have 1 goal, right?
Yeah, just the 1 goal against Sassuolo.
It's tough. It is very, very tough. I am very cautious about what happens this season. It's tough.
Yeah, we'll be keeping a very close eye on Fiorentina Femminile for the rest of the year, because it's a whole different ball game from years past. But let's move on here, and let's talk about which one of the let's go to Primavera players. How about which Primavera player has impressed you the most recently? For me, I think it's Filippo Di Stefano, who's playing up top. He's a striker. You can drift out wide a little bit. He was incredible against Inter Milan last week. 2 goals and an assist. I think both of his goals were unassisted. He got a little poacher's finish with a header and then just had a solo run and finish that was superb. And he didn't score in the 2-1 loss at Cagliari this morning, but again, he looked very active to me. Seemed like he was always involved in the final third. And looks like he might be the guy who picks up a lot of the slack from Samuel Spaluto last year. And yeah, hoping that he can keep developing. He's a Tuscan kid from outside of Lucca. So yeah, I really want to see him succeed.
Another team that is going to be hard to figure out who those players are. I'm still not sold on Aquilani a year and what, 3-4 games into it.
Yeah, a year and 2 cups, and he still hasn't convinced. That's crazy.
There's a legitimate chance, like the Femminile, that this team does get relegated.
Yeah.
Which they very nearly got relegated last year.
Yeah.
Now, how much of that is the lack of investment over the first 3 years? Now, they did make some investment this year, but how much of it is the lack of investment first 3 years under Daniele Prodi? It was a neglected part of the transfer process. And how much of it is Aquilani just not developing players? Now, you listen to players being interviewed, and they love Aquilani. I mean, who wouldn't? I mean, like, he seems like a great guy to hang out with. But I'm just not convinced that he's doing much on the development side, which is the entire reason for a program in the Primavera. You want to develop these players into being able to play like a Bernadeschi, a Chiesa, a Sotil, a Vlahovic, Milankovic, like all of these guys who have, they're there. I'm just not sure. So I look now more towards the international play. You know, Dimo Krastev has looked very good on Fiorentina's team and is now getting an opportunity with the Bulgaria under 21s. Young kid to be getting this opportunity.
Yeah.
He's always been on our radar, and I'm pretty sure he seems like he's grew another inch. I mean, he's a big dude.
Yeah, for an 18-year-old, he looks like a grown adult. Like he's Vlahovic sized. He's Milenkovic sized.
He may actually change the way that is categorized, because I think he's just even broader from that standpoint. Now,
he's stout.
Dusan has definitely added some weight, and that guy is becoming jacked. Like Igor, yeah. I think Igor is the way that we need to start looking at it. people are starting to follow that type of training. But Krastev's a big boy now.
Yeah, and he got the goal against Cagliari also. Equalizer, nice finish from a tight angle. Just hit it real hard with those massive legs.
Big boots.
Yeah. Oh boy. Yeah. And I'm sure you'll make Hisanka very happy by spotlighting Dimo Krastev, his favorite teenager. No, I'll support a shout for Krastev, definitely. And then for players on loan, I think the one who stands out to me got to be Christian Kwame, right?
Yeah, ditto.
Yeah, just scored 2 goals against Mechelen in his second game to open his account. And he looked like a different player than the guy we saw in Florence. He looked like the guy who was at Genoa, who Fiorentina bought. He was quick. He was decisive. He was really good with the ball at his feet. He dribbled past some people. He set up teammates. He looked so sharp. I really, really think maybe he's going to recapture his form over there at Anderlecht and come back next year, and Fiorentina will have another striker behind Vlahovic. He also played a little bit out on the wing for Anderlecht at times, so he could maybe work as a left winger too. I'm just thrilled for him. I know that he's had such a rough time since joining Fiorentina, and it's really just all gone wrong for him all the time. And I'm thrilled that he's shining over there, especially because Fiorentina apparently just rejected an offer from Anderlecht to renegotiate the terms of that loan and change it from a dry loan into a loan with a fee that they could buy him. And Fiorentina said no. Thrilled.
I don't get that. Look at Iličić. Look at so many players. Alonso that came to us, Veretout that came to us. There are just players where the environment doesn't suit them. And I love Christian Kwame, and I've said it for a long time. I just don't think that Fiorentina, there's just too much weight on his shoulders inside the city of Florence. There's just so much that he took on going back to the competition for who's going to be the first striking talent on the bench there, you know, him, Dusan and Cutrone. I think the best thing for him and also for the city of Florence and Fiorentina is that he has a remarkable season, and then just sell him for 18, 20 million euros and reinvest that into players that are going to be able to come in with, along with Chiesa's bounty that's coming in, along with some of the other players that'll be going out. I think that has to be the way that situation plays out. Again, I love the kid. I think he's going to be a remarkable, remarkable talent. I just don't see him being a remarkable talent in Fiorentina anymore because of the psychology behind it.
Yeah, but I mean, with Italiano there, I think that he fits Italiano's style real well. He's direct. If he rediscovers his Genoa form and keeps going like he is at Anderlecht, he's pretty good on the ball. He's fast. He likes to press. I think he could wind up being a great addition. I really do.
He could, but there's a lot of baggage. Even go back to the Pedro situation. Like, Pedro wasn't ever going to catch on, despite the fact that he had very good seasons going away. You know, there are just players who don't fit a club, who don't fit a culture. And I'm not saying he doesn't. I just think that there's just so much pressure and there's a psychological wall for why he will not succeed in Florence. And I don't think that we should press it to, if he has a great season, don't press it to ruin his career and then ruin the opportunity of us recapitalizing the money that we invested in him. Let him go where he wants to succeed, where he's having fun again in his career. He wasn't having fun in Florence.
Yeah.
Like, you have to have fun in this game. Like, not everybody approaches that from the standpoint of making money. A lot of these players need to do it from a passion. And it seems like to me, Kwame's one of those. Let him go, recapitalize some of the money, and Fiorentina put it back into the mercato. Don't think about it from the standpoint of, well, he has a Fiorentina contract. You know, he's going to honor that contract. We have to move past that. And I'm hoping that Italiano is one of those guys who understands players enough to be able to communicate with Barone and Prade and say, listen, let's get away from that bullshit. That isn't the right way of approaching these types of players. There is a lot of fragility in the game. I don't know if you watched Ted Lasso. I love it. Well, the second season's a little bit more depressing than the first, but you know, I think that it goes into the personal side of these players. And I think that, you know, as a player owner, Rocco Commisso, he needs to understand that when it's good for the psyche of a player to stay and when it's good for them to leave.
Yeah. I mean, we might have to agree to disagree on this one. Yeah. I'm still sold on Kwame all the way. All right. Well, and you know what, Mike, I think that brings us to a conclusion for today.
That works.
Yeah, I'm real glad you managed to jump on here after a month's worth of catastrophes. Real good to do this again.
Yeah, celebrating. It's a lot higher note this time. I mean, happier. This is great.
Yeah, no, I'm glad that Fiorentina is doing great. I'm sorry that you're got some other stuff going on. Let's call it. But yeah, man.
Next time we'll be missing some teeth or something. Black eyes, who knows?
One can only hope. All right.
Scudetto.
All right. Thanks, everyone. We'll catch y'all next time.
Take care.
Viola Station is hosted by Mike and Tito. Producer Mike produced this episode. Our theme song is Great Catch by Windchime Weather. Check them out at windchimeweather.bandcamp.com. Viola Station is the podcast from violanation.com. Viola Nation is part of the SB Nation network. Forza Viola.
Social Podcast Network.